Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Well, we projected that we were going to be broadcasting on a regular day Friday, but in fact, here we are today. So we've got a caller in the queue. Want to invite everyone who listens to our show or calls our show to follow us on Facebook. We really appreciate your support, especially if you're a regular caller. So you can find those accounts on our Blog Talk Radio profile, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. And you may reach us, 914-338-0164. Do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. And I probably should post the show in our on our Facebook pages today, which I haven't done the last couple of days. I don't know why. Probably getting too involved in the content of the show to remember. So I've got to remind myself to do that. But we have Karen on the line. Correct? 312, are you there?
Can they hear us?
I don't know. Let's try to call in. Okay. 312, are you able to hear us? What's going on? Because she should be able to hear us. And we're being heard. Because I'm talking. Yeah, we're getting feedback because I'm calling in on this number. Okay, 312-772-7. I'm not going to give your whole number out. 312, I'm going to disconnect you. And see if that person calls back. I'm going to make sure we can be heard. Talk a little bit, Neil, while I make this call. The feedback, I won't put this on speaker. That's where we're getting feedback.
That was pretty interesting. If you saw the debate yesterday between the vice president and perhaps the potential vice president, new vice president, that was kind of interesting. Our friendly Fly visited the debate.
Yeah, and what's interesting is because we streamed it on a laptop.
Yeah.
We could have watched it on a bigger TV, but the time factor required us to have to stream it on my laptop. We didn't see the Fly. We didn't see the Fly. And we didn't see his infected eye.
Yeah, I mean, it was what a mess. I mean, I did see the Fly with Vincent Price, but I didn't happen to see this guy. But I saw the Lord of the Flies, which is probably appropriate for our current administration, but in my opinion. But nonetheless, it was a more intelligent debate.
I think that's not saying much considering what the previous debate we experienced
prior week. Exactly.
It's not saying much, but yeah, it was more contained, obviously better behavior, though Pence was over talking both women and the moderator, my opinion, the moderator did a very poor job of reining him in when he overspoke. And also, a job of a moderator is to get answers to the questions that are being posed. And she did not press, and they both evaded. I will say they both were not answering.
They weren't giving everything.
They didn't answer the questions that were being asked. So, and she should have been more proactive in getting answers out of
them. To me, when they blocked Obama's choice, saying they had to wait for the election and let the people decide, Harris did bring that up a bit, but I think she should have emphasized it more and said, I don't owe you any answers. And
wait,
you coming
I'm sorry.
At me trying to demand whether I'm going to pack the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. She didn't.
She should have said, I don't owe you an answer.
The problem with her answer was, one, that she didn't mention what history 4 years ago, or what more than 4 years ago, it's about 5 years ago. She mentioned Lincoln, which actually doesn't fact check when you look back at history and what really happened. I think there was somewhat of a misrepresentation, and I think it would have been a safer bet for her to just say, listen, when Obama tried to appoint someone to the Supreme Court 10 months prior to his departure from office, he was blocked from doing so by the Senate.
I'm not going to
pertinent.
Address your question as long as you're not playing by the rules.
But did you know that Pence, and we're going to get to 312 came back, so we're going to get to you in a minute, but did you know that Pence was a commentator, a conservative Christian commentator? Anyway, he wrote an op-ed about cigarettes. I don't know what year it was. I can't remember the year, but anyway, decades ago, he wrote this article, and he said, smoking does not lead to cancer. So, but now a person who denied the effects of cigarettes and nicotine on a person's body, on people's bodies, is now heading the coronavirus task force. So, obviously,
and look where it got Van Halen. You know, he knew he had cancer. He didn't care. He just wanted to live life for the fullest. Van Halen.
Eddie Van Halen.
But
did you say Don Van Halen?
No.
Oh,
I just said
Van Halen.
But, you know, denial, and then, you know, our great conservative John Wayne finally came on and advocated to resist cigarette smoking.
Well, you know,
the
reason for Eddie Van Halen speculated that the reason that he developed this esophageal cancer is because he would put guitar picks in his mouth, and they're made with some kind of metal, and that it caused, I think he smoked too, and he obviously
was
a drug user, so he didn't live exactly a clean life, but to have a cancer attack the esophagus, either you're going to usually have to have been a smoker, but the fact that he would have guitar picks in his mouth constantly probably wasn't good for him either.
So we've
got a caller, 312. I don't know what happened prior. Hi, can you hear us well?
Yes. My name's Karen, calling from Chicago.
Yeah, hi, Karen. We were trying to get you on, and you weren't there. I don't know. Maybe you were on the other line. Okay.
Since you mentioned a little bit of politics, I do have a question. I'm waiting, like everybody else, for the stimulus check, I guess, that was supposed to come through. I was very disappointed that they couldn't come to an agreement that was going to help pay for my rental bills here. And my question is, do you see that coming maybe in November? I'm trying to be proactive, like you said, and plan ahead.
Well, it's hard to say because now Donald Trump has stopped all negotiations until after the election. So when those negotiations will start again and where they're going to be in November is a mystery. I mean, even now they're not able to agree. When the negotiations were going on, they were going back and forth. Donald Trump is now saying, well, Nancy Pelosi, give up all these other demands on the stimulus bill and we'll send out checks immediately to citizens. Obviously, Nancy Pelosi isn't going to do that. So I think it's not going to be right
after the election. I think, one, Donald Trump will still be in office if he isn't elected. And then, of course, if he is elected, he will be remaining in office for another 4 years. So I think it's going to be a while before we see any money.
Yeah, you know, he plays the American people based on the gravitational pull of his ego. That's what he based it on. So he can rush the Supreme Court justice choice and delay what really people need to survive. Those checks are important to some people. It's nothing. He'll just play the game and step on whoever he needs to step on as long as his shoes don't get dirty. So, you know, to ask that question, the deeper question is, what will be the state of our country when, if perhaps Trump decides not to leave office, according to the count,
right,
or he instigates a riot with his support group and causes a civil war just so we can have the pleasure of seeing the country go down the drain.
Another question that was evaded by Pence last night when he was asked what he would do if Trump decided not to leave office, how he was going to handle it. He refused to answer the question. So this administration is...
Well, I'll tell you something. Biden called Trump a clown. Now, I've known some pretty good clowns in my life. Charlie Chaplin, Stan Laurel. Trump is no clown. As in, what's his name said to, I forget, he said, you know, Kennedy. Who was it that said that in the vice presidential debate? He said, you're no Kennedy. I forget the name, but it was a reference to in the presidential debate, the head of Canada was referring to himself as being as good as Kennedy. He said, I know Edward Kennedy, or I know John Kennedy, and you know Kennedy.
I can't remember. I remember the reference, but I don't know.
But anyways, to answer your question, you've got to look, Karen, you've got to look at this two ways. You've got to look at this on a national level where a lot of people are worried, which kind of puts your personal journey at bay for a minute. And then you have to look at your personal journey to consider what's going to happen to me in my karma. No, because there's a separation now between, if you will, state and nation. There's a separation between individual and the United States community. Because we're all being affected. This has become something that affects all of us. So we have a common denominator right now that our nation is in distress and that so many Americans are suffering. This is a common denominator. We all agree on it. But when we get now to the nitty-gritty of, well, what about our individual lives as opposed to what impacts us during this pandemic? And that's another question, because there are some people who are handling it better than others. There are some people who are escaping the virus, some people who get it with mild symptoms, some people who get it and end up dying, some people who need those checks desperately, and then some people who would like to have them, but it's not going to really change their life. So, you know, we have to determine in your journey, Karen, your question is a good one, but we also have to consider your personal journey.
I mean, we just talked about a change. She called it the other day, and of course, the still-seeking work. I don't know if anything's changed on that front in the last couple of days. Probably not, but she is going through a change between now, because she's 49. No, she's 49. She's... she's 49, so she's going through her seventh cycle of her master number, and then she's at the doubling of her karmic number the following year at the age of 50, which is coming up. So she's going through a change. But I totally empathize with you being stressed about this, and it's very frustrating to have to rely on. I mean, I think both sides are the way this is being handled. I mean, we talk about the pandemic and what's happened to jobs and businesses, and the left has done a lot to destroy those jobs and businesses because of over precautions, in my opinion, about a virus. And, you know, and of course then we have the administration who's on the right and not supporting the American public with monies that are needed and unemployment benefits that are needed. So, I mean, it's both sides are screwing everything up. But our nation, I mean, the economy is going down the toilet.
I can tell you this, you know, Karen, your personal outlook is good to the extent that you're at a multiple of a seven. So
okay.
There's something in your energy and your karma that's going to get you through this. So I wouldn't hit any panic buttons if I were you.
Okay.
If that answers the baseline of your question.
Do you have any, I mean, you said you're going to earmark this money for rent and things like that.
Right.
Do you have some savings still?
No.
To pay?
No. No, I'm working part time. So my boss said that he was supposed to pay us. Yeah, so I'll get paid next week, and I'll give him some money for the rent. You know, make a payment. But
I don't think we knew you were working part time, so that's important. Where are you working?
From home for a marketing project. Yeah, it's just for 6 to 8 weeks.
So you do have money coming in. You're not totally unemployed. That's good.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So you're still getting these contract jobs, but the permanent job
right.
is still out of reach.
Correct.
You should be, I mean, you know, what you got thrown off the cruise ship. You're on a raft. You're not sinking.
Yeah.
You're on a raft. That's where you are. You're on a life little thing. And so you're saying, you know, is this raft going to turn it back into a boat? No. What the raft will do will carry you, sustain you, over the ocean until you get on to the next proper ship in that metaphor.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So I think you're going to be okay. I can give you an obscure symbol to look for. You know, sometimes
okay.
in life we look through the lens of life, if you will. And we just look for objects. We look for symbols. We look for landmarks. We don't know. The landmark itself isn't important, but it's an indication of a sign for things to come. Like they say, well, if you come into my home, as soon as you see the Dollar Tree or as soon as you see the Mobile gas station, then you know you're going to be making a left-hand turn soon. What I see, I don't know what this means yet, but what I'm seeing are motorcycles. Now, you know, maybe down your street you'll see a bunch of motorcycles riding by one day and you go, boy, that was odd. But you're going to be seeing motorcycles before this next job comes in. I don't know why motorcycles. It's part of the psychic vision.
Okay.
And I don't know if motorcycles have meant anything to you in your life, just for reference. We can ask that question. Motorcycles have any meaning to you?
Yeah, sometimes I'll be somewhere and actually I had to my dog was passing away and I just said I have to go to the vet, make a payment or something, and I saw some motorcycles that were doing tricks down the street, like they were a group of guys and they were just doing all sorts of tricks on the street. And it was so bizarre because it was just like in a deserted kind of area. And these guys just started doing all these tricks and there were a group of them and they were all doing tricks with their motorcycles. So I thought it was real bizarre that just came out of the blue. So,
So
I can kind of see the motorcycle.
There's an example. So that is an indication that you know, and you're taking your dog to the hospital, so there was some urgency involved in the passage.
Yeah.
So the same thing I think is going to happen, Karen. You just
okay.
may see some motorcycle thing, and then suddenly, you know, you've reached the destination of your next permanent job. So just look for that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, Karen.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks. I'll let you guys know. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, we symbols. We live in a world of symbols.
Yes. Percussion.
I'm a
drums.
Advocate of symbols.
Symbols. tambourine, triangle.
Triangle, yeah, all these symbols.
Well, those aren't symbols, but anyway, they're part of the percussion family. I know I'm using a different C-Y-M-B-A-L-S as opposed to S-Y-M-B-O-L-S.
Yeah.
Is that funny? Another example of how language is so confusing.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
There was a book called Amelia Bedelia that was a children's book, and it was the whole premise of the book was based on she was a maid, and you know it was really a funny book. You know, draw the curtains, so she drew them with a pen.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it was these double meanings of words, and it was meant to educate children on how words have dual, if not more, meanings. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, it's like the Dennis the Menace cartoon, where he's in the living room with his mother and father, and a guest is there sitting in the chair, and Dennis the Menace goes up to the guest and says, "Did you sustain any injuries when you fell off the wagon?" But you know, and then this we're talking about symbols, Man and the Symbols, book by Cole Yu. A great book, a fabulous book about the history of symbols. And when we get into the idea of symbols, I mean, even take this fly on, and I can't get over this fly being on his head for 2 minutes.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, well, the symbolism of a fly selecting one of two candidates,
yeah,
and it's Pence that he chooses, or he or she,
but
the fly.
2 minutes. I mean, I think they had
but
2 minutes to discuss.
You know what flies are drawn to.
Yeah, I know.
So.
What does it say? Excrement. But the idea that that they had 2 minutes to speak. Oh, you know, is this some kind of mechanical fly that was coded to sit on his head for two minutes? And, you know, and we're not here. I mean, I guess we are here, but we're not really here trying to put down the current administration. And we're not saying that Trump is totally evil and that he hasn't done some things that have helped. He certainly has done some things. And you know, but we just are in disagreement personally. And so we have the right to express our views. But when we get into the idea of symbols and now, you know, phrases from the debates are now plastered on T-shirts, and you know, we lift things out of context, and we make a symbol out of it. And you know, every time that, like for instance, if someone's just talking, and they attach their thumb to their index finger, that people think that's the sign of the devil or the Masons or something.
You mean the OK symbol? Yeah.
Well,
it is six. It represents 666.
Yeah. But is that intentional?
Not
I
always.
Mean, I do it sometimes.
Yeah, you do.
I'm not,
quit doing the devil. Quit making the devil sign.
Yeah.
I do.
And, you know, hand movements and gestures are sometimes just part of our natural behavior. There used to be this great comedian who was impersonating. I forgot who was impersonating. I even forget the comedian's name. But his act was all about the human gesture. And it was hilarious. The way that we move our bodies when we talk, we don't really need to move our bodies. Our tongues do not need the rest of our bodies in order to express itself. So why do we do it? Well, we do it for emphasis. And we do it as symbolic gesture, because there are some tribes where meaningfully a gesture could cost you your life if it's insulting. Sometimes they say that if you extend your left hand to some cultures, that's a great insult, because that's supposed to be the hand you wipe yourself with, and that's a no-no. You know, so if you don't bow, if you don't look down, if you have eye contact with certain cultures, that's considered
offensive.
An insult. And then there are cultures that say, look me in the eye when I'm talking to you. I mean, these are still, maybe those are more subtle body movements, but when we get into the idea of body movement symbols, flies on hair, finger gestures, you know, we know the most famous finger gesture, but the idea that when we incorporate now into a more sophisticated language like motorcycles and what this might mean, Christ even talks about signs and symbols to look for before the coming of the apocalypse. And now the apocalypse has become so ingrained in our natural language. It's a common word now.
We're experiencing so much devastation. Hurricanes have increased exponentially. The fires across the West. I mean, every summer now we can expect major destruction, and all, I mean, these forests and wildlife are being destroyed. It's terrible, much less the you know, human life that's being lost, the property damage, the businesses that are being, I mean, Napa has lost hundreds of restaurants and wineries. It's mind-boggling due to these fires.
You know, and it's within, you just think of it, this has really made a dramatic change within the last 50 years. What, around 68, 69, you know, we start to see some signs of it, even in the mid-60s.
Are you talking about
the
rioting
language and what it really means in terms of the, we've had, you know, we can keep going backward in time and find reasons to explain the notion that we're in the apocalypse, even back on World War II. We could even say it was the American Revolution, the war between the states. The idea that now we've entered something a little bit more advanced in our culture. And sure, we can keep going on. This just might be another stepping stone towards another 100 years.
Wasn't it 70 years beyond 1949?
1948. That generation wouldn't pass away.
So
that was a prediction somewhat vaguely mentioned, but and hard to determine what was really said, because the corruption of the language in the Bible is so corrupted. It's not the original language. It's the King James Version, whatever. This has all been censored and altered to where the exact meaning of the words make a great change. Just imagine, you know, if you say, hey, let's go up to the corner and hang out. Now, we know what that means, but another culture may say, you're going to, what, pull down your pants? Or you're going to hang somebody? You know, we don't know what the words really mean. And when we take specific definitions of words in their slang or lingo, the idea that there's a great gap between the interpretation of what a word is, just as
that's
there can
why
be a great gap in our notion of predictions.
That's why Amelia Bedelia should be required reading for every person in the United States.
Yeah.
It would really help to clarify.
Yeah. Well, one thing is for certain.
Language.
It's the rhyme. The rhyme will change. But the idea that even when we, in our psychic readings, when Chris and I are doing psychic readings and we're talking to somebody and we're getting a sort of a clash of ideas, if you will, we're trying to merge it into a common theme. Some of it takes the art of interpretation and maybe the art of communication in terms of trying to arise to a point in which you sound coherent and it makes sense. A lot of times when we talk to people, we'll say things and it makes no sense to them until you go deeper and deeper into the interpretation. Well, anything can be analyzed to death, but I think that the attempt of trying to figure out what's going on the planet, what's going on in our nation, what's going on in individual lives, demands and commands a certain sense of interpretation, aside from the immediacy of what a symbol represents. You have to go deep into that. You know what, for instance, just with Karen, I don't know if she's still on the line, but
no.
when she said, well, I saw motorcycles doing tricks on the street. Now, I may be guilty, but I thought, doing tricks on the street with prostitutes? I was going to mention it, but I thought, well, I'm not going to mention it for the sake of humor. But, you know.
I appreciate it. I'm proud of your restraint.
Yeah.
Good for you.
But still, there is that language again, because I immediately thought that they were females on motorcycles doing tricks, straight walkers. But no, they were doing tricks. And were they really doing tricks? A trick, one is it's a maneuver. They were doing intricate maneuvers. A trick is meant to deceive. So when she says the word trick, they weren't really doing tricks. Again, it's a corruption of the language. They were doing motorcycle maneuvers that were outside of the regular operation of a motorcycle. But we now call it tricks. You know, a magician does tricks. It's illusion. Tricks are illusion. They weren't really doing tricks. But again, the way we corrupted the language is that they were doing tricks, meaning they were doing outlandish things on their motorcycles. But you see, when you listen to it, how many different interpretations there are. And my mind was going into five or six different attitudes of her language, towards her language. So, you know, it's funny. We recently had, we were going to have something done at the house, and I said, well, will this present any problems? And the workman said, what do you mean problems?
Yeah, he was defensive.
Well, it wasn't that it was defensive.
He was being defensive.
Well, he was, maybe so.
Yeah.
But I was in error. I mean, yeah, what do you mean problems? I mean, I'm a, you know, are you two going to fight at when we leave?
No,
you
know, I know. What happened was something was put in without there being a second part put in that was supposed to be there, and they failed to ask, which was their error. But we failed to tell them that we had a piece that was missing, but they should have asked. And so what you were concerned about was the fact that the work had to be redone, and you were worried that potentially redoing it would cause
a problem. Screws or whatever. Redoing something, sometimes when you set something in, if you have to redo it, it's not quite the same way as when you originally did it. Something can be altered. So my question was logical to that extent, but it was asked in such an organization of disorganization that he didn't know what it meant. Like, is it not going to work? I knew what I meant, but I wasn't being specific. So there's a gap in the logical aspect of what a person means. Sometimes it's best to be specific, and that's what it boiled down to. But yeah, there was a little bit of a sarcastic tone in there. But again, I could be guilty of that. If someone says, well, you know, you say I'm going to get $100 on Friday. Is this going to present problems? I can go, well, what do you mean problems? Well, I don't know what you mean by problems. So the word problems is even a broad term. And when we look at that word, the problems demands something to... We need to specify. Our language is such that we need to specify. We need to be exact. Go to any courtroom. I used to go to courtrooms when I was a kid with my grandfather. And boy, did you have to learn the language. Because when you're not being specific, it's a great shame.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because we're talking about the judicial process and language needing to be specific, especially in that setting. But then getting back to the debate last night, I mean, and any debate or any person that is of a that holds a political office, and the vagueness of their speech, I mean, it's unbelievable. There was so much vagueness in that debate. and evasiveness.
Which is a scary thing. Well, you know,
and politicians are famously non-specific.
Yes. But we also have an inherent great problem in terms of the Supreme Court. When you need to interpret the Constitution, meaning the Constitution can be vague.
Yeah, absolutely. So the law can be
interpretation
differently.
It has an immediacy of being biased. And that's what's going on right now with some of the interpretation of the Constitution in the aspect of Roe versus Wade and other things that where there's a map of positions of equality and what words really meant and how language has changed and whether you're a traditionalist and adamant in the concrete formation of the Constitution or whether you believe that it has to move with time. And it's a living document that lives and breathes according to the time of our situation, what's going on. So, you know, and then we have an immediate obstacle in terms of liberals and conservatives. And we're trying to balance the system so that we get a fair assessment. Because if it's off balance, then, you know, one side's going to be favored, whether it's conservatives or liberals. We may not get a firm, we may win our side, but we may not get a fixed interpretation in terms of the balance of energy. So, you know, as long as you pray to God that whoever is occupying the seats of the Supreme Court are going to do so in an unbiased, non-judgmental, non-personal way. But then again,
well,
you can't avoid the idea that the interpretation of the Constitution can be wedded with personal belief.
And obviously it's going to be because, you know, the prospective justice that we have is greatly influenced by her personal faith. And that is going to override her guiding principles, rather than the law being the foremost.
Well, it's weird. I mean, they say that she was a handmaid to men and she waited on men and she comes from an organization where the women are subservient. But then how did she get
to, I know. I've thought of that myself. But she's also the mother to 7 children, which people are, you know, slamming her for being, you know, having 7 kids and all she wants to do is reproduce. Part of that, I believe it's 2 of her children are adopted. So she didn't actually, she has 5 natural children.
She raised 7 kids. And she, you know, that there's nothing to condemn there. But it's also in the interpretation of human rights. And this is a great debate. Even in the aspect of Roe versus Wade, do we give women the rights to choose? And in that decision, destroy potential life, or do we respect potential life and maybe aggravate human behavior to such a degree that many women are going to die because they have no options? Or they have to use an option that is deathly or lethal, potentially. So it's a great debate. We get into the matter, though. Here's when we get into the matter of choice. Even in the Bible, there is personal choice. There may be a set rule, but then there's the allowance of choice. And this is one of the great documents in terms of how that biblical stage was set. That we are of a species that we get to make choices, not according to the element of flight, the flight distance, or some sort of conditional or unconditional behavior, but we can make moral and ethical choices. And I'll tell you, even in the animal kingdom, animals make choices, I think, that are beyond instinct. I was just seeing a picture of a fawn and a baby bobcat, that joined together because they were abandoned. Now, that's not instinct. That there's something maternal.
Well, yeah, I know.
On the same note,
I saw a picture of a goose shielding. Actually, the goose was frozen to a pole, but under its wings was a puppy. And they were in the freezing cold. Both have been adopted.
Yeah.
And they were actually adopted together, which is really nice. But again, a maternal instinct and a goose and a puppy.
Yeah.
Would seem like, you know, not a likely pairing. We do. Hi. 408.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm in Ballard, California.
Okay, it's a little bit hard to hear you. I don't know if you're, it sounds like you're in a car or something. Are you on speaker?
Sorry, can you hear me? Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
No, sorry, I was just wearing my mask.
Oh, that makes it hard to,
I know.
Yeah, communicate.
Hear anything? Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. Well, we can promise you that this conversation will not cause any infection between any of the parties.
Yeah,
and that
would do respect to
Valerie.
Valerie, right?
Yeah. Hi.
Okay. Hi.
Hey. How are you guys today?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just hanging out at work. Fun. Always fun.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So I'm moving at the end of the month. I don't have a job lined up yet. I'm leaving Google to...
Wait, you
just
that, I know, but there was something else you said. I'm missing like every other word.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I work for Google currently, and I just like woke up one day and I was like, I'm tired of California. I want out. I quit my job, and I'm just moving to Colorado. I was just wondering, like, is it everything I hope it's going to be?
So you're an Uber. Did you say Uber?
Google.
Google, see, oh, Google. We're not hearing. He said Uber. I thought I heard Google, so we're not hearing properly.
Oh,
Google. You work for Google. Well, Google, and you're. I can see where you're calling from, which is where Google is located or close
How
to.
How do you work for Google?
Well, it's a huge. I mean, there's so many different departments, and it's supposedly a great place to work because they offer. Childcare, and they have gyms, and they give transportation to the job. I mean, there's all kinds of benefits and perks to working for Google. So why don't you like it? What department do you work in?
So I work for a subsector called Verily Life Science. I do mostly like R&D engineering for them. We're inventing just different things that companies come to us and we just create it.
You gotta talk distinctly into the phone.
Okay, sorry. Give me 1 second.
Speakerphone. If you're on speaker, no good. Verily Life Science. He does engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, Verily Life Science. Yeah, we're in the process of inventing a couple of different things, like contact lenses that are like self-focusing and transitional, and bioelectronics.
Contact lenses and what? Mm-hmm.
Bioelectronics.
Okay, what's your birth date? I thought there's a...
June 23rd, 1986.
There is a 5, 19 in the 23. Okay, 1986, 7, 8, 11, 21... And in her karmic number, she's an 8, but she's got a 5 in there. Okay. All right. And
it's moving to Colorado.
1434. Wow. So you're 34 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So you're coming up on a change in June, but you're actually in the window of that change happening. Isn't she 35-8?
She's 26. I get 26.
6, 7, 8,
11. Maybe I'm wrong.
6, 7, 8. I may have added wrong.
No, I think you're right.
21.
You're right.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so So you're coming up on a change in June.
Yeah.
But you're in a window of that change 9 months prior to your birth date and 9 months after. I mean, there can be changes. So
right.
The fact that you're planning a move isn't surprising. So you are moving. Is it set in stone that you're moving?
Yeah, I already put in my notes work, and I'm already found a place. I'm just going.
You're just going. And yeah. And you don't like Google.
No, I love my company. I dislike California very much, though.
So. Oh.
It's California.
Yeah. So you like your job. I got that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You like your job, but you don't like California. And there's no way there's no Google outposts in Colorado?
Not my subsector, no. Because we're part of the alphabet within Google. But, I mean, I'm just nervous but happy, but, like, I have the confidence I can find a job. It's just, I don't know if, like, I'm excited about leaving.
You're excited to broke up?
Yeah. Yeah. Part where you're, like, scared at the same time. So,
well,
yeah.
You know, Valerie, when you look
yeah.
at code, listen closely, when you look at code, you have a 6 and a 2, that's an 8, and then a 3. And then you also have a 3 in your day and an 8 in your year, which is another
mm-hmm.
83. So you have 6, 2, that's an 8 and a 3. And then you have a 3 in your day and an 8 in your year. And so there's another.
And then she also has another 6.
And in the journey, yeah, you have another 6. So in the journey of your life, there's a certain balance. So you moving
mm-hmm.
from 34 to 35, which is going to be your karmic change, you should experience a nice balance. In other words, you're going to find the place, you're going to find the job. You might have a week or two of a little bit of tension, but the transition should go smooth. It should
that's
be a smooth transition by numerical interpretation, but that's where we start.
Right.
Why are you leaving
little...
California? Why are you leaving California? What don't you like about it?
It's very expensive. Like, it's very, very expensive to live out here. I only live about 10 miles from my job, and it takes me a good 45 minutes one day, like, just to get to work. Traffic is just so bad.
Where
and
do you live?
It's the Bay Area, like San Francisco.
Oh.
You're in San Francisco, or are you like in the East? I mean, the South Bay. Isn't Google in the South Bay? Like,
well, it's in so it's in South San Francisco.
South San Francisco.
And,
yeah.
And then I'm in Oakland, which is
you're
right over the bridge.
I know mm-hmm. the traffic there is horrendous, and we're in Southern California actually, so we know about California.
Yeah, the traffic.
Yeah,
the traffic is no fun.
Polluted, and it's yeah, expensive.
It's just, yeah, and I'm just tired of spending my whole almost paycheck on rent. And then everyone, you have to have a roommate just to survive out here. And I'm just like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, you want to be
well,
on your
sense.
Own. And there's no
yeah.
way for you to, and perhaps are you interested in maybe settling in Colorado if it's a right fit for you and like maybe buying a home in the future rather than just
yeah.
roaming?
Yeah, those are things that I could never even do out here. I could never
right.
own my own home. Like, and that when I lived in Arizona, I had my own home there. I didn't have to worry about other people. It was just, sometimes those things are more peaceful than saying I work for Google in California to me, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm ready for a change.
You know, toughness about living in California, you have to be at a certain level to really make it work or
right,
have certain
yeah.
circumstances for you. But the move, Valerie, is legitimate. The time that you're moving, so this isn't just about you moving from California to Colorado because you're fed up with California. This is about the journey of your life coinciding with that this journey to Colorado was already impressed upon you in your birth. You're going to make a move at this age.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like it's a good decision. Everyone thinks I'm crazy, but I'm just like, I'm going. I'm out.
No. Your brain is coded to a journey, and you're finding immediate reasons for that journey, but your brain has a deeper code in it that's saying, at 35, you're going to be moving.
Well, my brain knows what's up then, huh?
You know, it's funny. We talk about number systems. Van Halen, his karmic change was at 84. And he
in 1984.
And he actually did an album called 84, I read in the paper, that, wow, look at that, you know, and he had to change that. You always have some mark of distinction.
And obviously at varying degrees, obviously that's a pretty outstanding, you know, mark of distinction.
Right. But you're going to be moving into an area where
their own level.
Your income is going to be based on your communication. So the job that you're going to have is going to be based on communication.
That's why I was getting a 5.
Huh.
And she's got a key. 3.
Yeah.
What are you, in your job, what kind of communication, it sounds like you're in science. Field. Is there, what type of communication is involved in that job sector?
Oh, just like 90 meetings a day.
Okay.
Just about what we're planning and what we're doing and what we're launching. And always in communication.
And are you looking for work in the same field?
In the same ish field in engineering, yeah. Sure. I enjoy what I do.
And you've got some, when are you planning on leaving? Are you like next few months? Oh, wow. So you're like ready to go. On the 27. 20, 28, 9, 10. 5, too. That's the day you're leaving. So you have a place already? Or not?
Yes.
So you do have a place.
Mm-hmm.
And you have. Yep. And you have no job yet, but obviously.
Is it a one bedroom?
I'm sorry?
Is it a one bedroom, two bedroom?
No, it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath condo.
How much is that rent as opposed to what you were paying before?
I'm going to be saving $3,000 a month.
Oh my!
It's
so how much is a 3-bedroom? How much is a 3-bedroom cost in Colorado?
$1,000.
I guess it depends on the area, of Colorado too, because like Aspen, for instance, is like super expensive.
There's no way.
Areas of Colorado that are less expensive.
It snow where you are? Are you going to experience snow?
I'm sorry.
Will it snow there in the winter?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it's in the Springs area, but not too heavy, not too much, no.
Okay, so what kind of job are you looking for?
Anything in engineering, yeah. Anything along the same semiconductor or any kind of process engineering.
The only thing I can tell you right now, Kristen can add to it, visually speaking, mm-hmm. I see the name Mitchell. I don't know what Mitchell is yet. But I see
Mitchell?
The name Mitchell. Have you ever known a Mitchell?
Or a Mitch?
No, I don't even know a Mitchell. Nope.
Well, don't worry about what you... Okay, so you don't
That's
know.
Okay.
So it's a future.
Uh-huh.
Something with Mitch or Mitchell, I don't know. That's one thing.
Be able
to look...
do hair and work for Paul Mitchell.
Yeah, Paul Mitchell. Why, have you ever done hair before?
No.
Okay, well,
I was just thinking it was the only one I knew.
In a really brief way, tell me what you would do as an engineer in a potential attitude of a job. Give us an idea of what you would do.
Anything within like semiconductor making processors, like that's what because I worked at Intel and I worked at Microchip and that, in a fabrication facility. So something like that.
Well, would you work Could you work for a company that's based in communications?
Yeah.
Okay. Give me an idea of what a company based in communications would be.
I'm not even sure.
Well, would a cell phone company like Verizon or something like that be, because they use, you know, semiconductors.
Well, I know that Boeing is down there. They have I was looking into Boeing and something with like engineering too, but it's a little out of my somewhat realm. But
I wouldn't say that's a communications.
They have a lot of military bases there too.
Do you have any experience in the area?
In what?
Do you have experience in that area?
Yeah. I mean, I'm 34 and I've been working in this field for like 10 years now. Before that, it was just random jobs finishing school, but it's really what I have the most experience in.
Are you moving that on the 27th, you said?
Yeah, I'm leaving on the 27th.
So, and you don't have a job yet. Are you applying for jobs now?
Yeah, I've been applying. I've had one phone interview already with a company that does calibration on tools, which is not really within, I mean, like, it would be a big downgrade from what I do, but okay, it could work.
Okay.
Well, I'm still going to look, though.
For fun, we're going to put out a a date of November. I was getting November 3rd, the selection day. But we're going to put out energy that you get a job target.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, you know, Valerie, don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's necessary that you downgrade. If you've got 10 years experience, look
right.
for something that fits your level of knowledge and experience.
Right.
Rather than downgrading. I mean, you don't want to get a job that you're unhappy in either and have
right.
to switch. So that's something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just like seeing what's out there and like, looking at all the different possibilities.
All the different options. And it doesn't hurt you to apply. I mean, the more you apply, the more choice you're going to have when you get offers. And then you
right,
can make
right.
a decision. So I'm not, suggesting that you don't apply for jobs that are beneath your qualifications, but definitely do a range of applications. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Keep in touch
with us. I appreciate it. Yeah.
All right.
Definitely. I appreciate you guys.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye. Okay. We're done. We're off the air. That's it. Back on the air next week, Wednesday and Friday, our regular schedule, and we will speak with you.